Shalom, everyone, and happy Hanukkah. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back studying the Torah portions. This week we're looking at the portion Miketz, which means at the end. The reading this week is from Genesis 41:1 to 44:17. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video right now, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
In this portion, we learn how Joseph rises from the pit of prison to become the master of all Egypt. Then, after decades of separation from his family, Joseph sees his brothers again, but chooses to conceal his identity and put the sons of Israel through a series of challenges and tests.
So at the end of the last portion, if you remember, we read that Joseph was in prison, and he ended up getting forgotten about in prison for 2 years. And so at the beginning of this portion, we read what happens 2 years later that ends up getting Joseph out of prison. We read that the Pharaoh of Egypt wakes up from two really weird dreams. These dreams have interpretations, just like the fellow prisoners that Joseph was with in the last portion. But just like those prisoners, Pharaoh has no idea what these mean. And he tries to find magicians and such who can interpret his dream, but no one can. So the chief cupbearer, who was with Joseph in the last portion and ended up getting freed, says, "Hey, Pharaoh, I just remembered there was a young Hebrew prisoner who interpreted my dream, and it was right. So why don't you ask him about it?" So now, after 2 years in prison since the last time, and he was in prison for longer than that, but after this, all this time, Joseph finally emerges from prison, having been called out by Pharaoh himself to interpret his dreams.
So then the servants of Pharaoh go get Joseph and bring him out of prison, and they give him a shave and a change of clothes so he can be presentable before Pharaoh. And so then Joseph is brought before the king of Egypt. Pharaoh presents the problem to him. He says, "I have a dream. There is no one in all my kingdom who can interpret this. But my cupbearer says that you, of all people, have the power to interpret dreams. Can you do it?"
And Joseph's like, "No." He says, "It's not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." So in this situation where he's been picked out of prison to appear before Pharaoh because of his dream interpreting ability, even here, he's given credit to God, saying, "I can't interpret dreams. God is the one who just tells it to me."
So in response to that, Pharaoh might as well give it a go. He tells Joseph his dream, and he has two dreams, actually. The first one involves seven big fat cows getting eaten by seven ugly thin cows. And the second one is seven big fat
ears of
corn getting eaten by seven thin ugly ears of corn.
So it's pretty obvious that they're connected, but...
Well, I think that's part of what makes the dream so troubling, is that it happens twice.
Yeah.
It shows this is not normal. And so Joseph does say to Pharaoh, these dreams are talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And he says, "God has given you a direct revelation of what's about to happen." That's really interesting, is Joseph's already said, God's the one who gives interpretations.
God's also the one who gives the dreams that need to get interpreted.
Right. So he's showing, the same person who's working through me is also working through you. That's Joseph's way of saying, I'm no more special than you are. It's God who's doing this.
Right.
So then he gives the interpretation. And he says, the seven cows and the seven ears of corn are 7 years. First, seven good years of plenty, where the crops of Egypt are going to grow abundantly. They'll have plenty. And then immediately after them will be 7 years of famine.
Really, really bad.
Really, really bad famine. So bad that everyone will forget the good times. Now, what's really interesting is Pharaoh brought him in here to ask for an interpretation. But now Joseph goes beyond interpreting to recommending a course of action.
Yeah, and the course of action wasn't laid out in the dreams.
No, completely not.
He just says, this is the interpretation. God gave you two dreams just to say he's definitely going to do this. It's really sure. And now, Pharaoh, here's what you should probably do. So this is actually coming from, not from these dreams, not from this interpretation. Joseph is the one who's saying this.
Joseph is a prisoner. He's been wallowing in prison and before that slavery for 13 years. Mm. He's no one of any level on which to speak to Pharaoh.
Yeah, he's literally of like the least significance of anybody. But now suddenly, he's brought on a level.
And he's presuming to recommend policy on how to run a government to the king.
To the Pharaoh of Egypt, one of the most powerful nations at the time.
And his recommendation is for Pharaoh to pick a wise and discerning man to set over Egypt and collect the produce from the plentiful years and store all that up so that during the years of famine, they'll have food and they won't starve and die. And Pharaoh, when he hears this policy recommendation, he says, yeah, that's a good idea. I just need a wise and discerning man.
Who could it possibly be? Joseph's recommendation here shows himself to be wise and discerning. And it's so wise, Pharaoh even says, can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? Now, NAS translates it divine spirit. The words here is Ruach Elohim, the spirit of God. So Pharaoh is, he's pagan or whatnot, but he recognizes God is speaking through Joseph, not just in his dream interpretation, but also in how wise he is. We saw in the last portion how when he was over Potiphar's house, everything was blessed that he did. And when he was in the jail, the jailer put Joseph in charge and the jail was blessed. And so now Pharaoh's like, we're going to do this for Egypt now. Joseph, you're in charge. You are going to be the most in charge person in the land, except me. But here's my signet ring. Do whatever you want. Everybody do what Joseph says.
God is with Joseph. And everyone can see that. Everyone has been seeing it. The blessing of God has been pursuing Joseph wherever he goes.
Even in slavery and prison.
Yes. And now in the court of the king. And so because of the interpretation of the dream and everything that God showed Joseph, Pharaoh's exalting him. Joseph was humble. Mm. But Pharaoh recognized that he was the wise and discerning man.
Yeah.
Who was perfect to rule over all Egypt. So now, suddenly, in an instant, Joseph is changed from being a prisoner to the most powerful man in all Egypt next to Pharaoh himself. Mm. He suddenly has gold and clothes and everyone
and
is bowing before him.
And a wife.
A wife. Suddenly he has everything. Mm. And so he immediately gets to work. Mm. The years of plenty come and he starts storing up, just like he said should be done.
Yeah.
It says that he stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. So that's how much God was providing plenty to Egypt.
And this was only a fifth of what was being produced for those years.
Yeah, a fifth of immeasurable is still immeasurable.
But I think that what's really interesting here is that the recommendation of what to do wasn't provided in the vision. The vision just said what was going to happen, the plenty and the famine. And Joseph saw what was coming and made practical steps to say, what should we do with this information that God gave us? So being wise isn't simply just doing what God says, because sometimes he doesn't give explicit instructions in specific instances. Sometimes you have to see what God has given you and then from that figure out what you need to do.
God doesn't write down a bunch of specifics for every single problem you'll ever have in your life. Here's the specific solution to that specific problem. Wisdom is taking the principles that God gives you in Scripture and being able to apply them to your situation based on your resources.
Based on what God's given you.
Yeah, and seeing what the prudent response is. It's being a good manager, really. God has given you resources, and he wants you to use those in the most prudent way possible to accomplish the most and to be prepared. That's what Joseph is doing here. He's making a plan to use the plenty that God is blessing him with and prepare for hard times that he knows are going to come.
Right.
It can never hurt to be prepared.
Yeah.
That's good stewardship, and God wants us to be good stewards of what he's given us. So Joseph's been put in charge. He's got tons of stuff. We've already talked about how suddenly he had everything, even a wife.
Yeah.
Now God adds to give him kids. And so the first son he has, he names Manasseh. Mm-hmm. The word means something like making to forget. Mm-hmm. And he says, it's because God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. And the second son he calls Ephraim. It means something like making fruitful. And he says, it's because God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So I found this interesting that in the naming of these two sons, Joseph is basically saying, things are better for me now than they were when I was with my family. Thinking back to how bad things were for him when his brothers hated him and, you know, sold him into slavery and all that.
Yeah, and now everything is going really well for him. He's second in the land in Egypt.
Yes, the land that his brothers had intended to sell him into for affliction, that's where God made him fruitful. Mm. And his blessings are so much that he says he's forgotten all his father's house. Mm. So that's the part that I found especially interesting, because it's like he's almost saying, I've disowned my past. I'm leaving my past. I'm leaving my family all behind. Hmm. God put me here, and here I'm fruitful.
Yeah. But then at the same time, we'll see very quickly here, he hasn't like detached himself from his family. Emotionally speaking.
Right. He hasn't emotionally detached himself, but he's, for the time being at least, he's put that all out of his mind. Mm. That's not troubling him right now.
So after Joseph's stocked up Egypt and everything during the 7 years of plenty, he has children, everything's going great for Joseph. Then, like he prophesied, really, the famine strikes. And suddenly we learn that it's basically struck globally.
It says there was famine in all the earth.
Yeah. So everywhere you go, famine, famine, famine. And so everybody is turning to Egypt because that's the only place anywhere where there's still grain and bread.
The famine is everywhere. But Joseph is still okay. Because Joseph had stocked all that stuff up.
Yeah.
So, like you said, everyone turns to Egypt, and more specifically to Joseph, to get the food they need to live. Mm-hmm. And people from all around go to Joseph to buy grain. It says all the earth came to Joseph to buy grain. Mm. So it's showing all the earth has salvation from this famine.
In Joseph.
Through Joseph. God put Joseph in just the right spot.
In just the right time.
At just the right time. So everyone could be saved if they came to Joseph. Mm. So there's another layer of messianic foreshadowing. Mm. God sent Joseph. He had to go through suffering. And afterward was exalted to the right hand of the king. And now anyone who comes to him will be saved. And anyone who doesn't will starve and die.
Yeah.
Yeshua says, I am the bread of the life. Anyone who hungers should come to Yeshua. Mm. Just like how Joseph is filling the hunger of anyone who comes to him by food he provides. Yeshua
provided himself.
Provided himself to satisfy the hunger of anyone who comes to him. If they're hungering for the true food, which he provides.
So with there being famine everywhere, that includes the land of Canaan, where Israel lives. And so Jacob says to his sons, why are you staring at one another? there's bread in Egypt. Go down there and get some so that we don't die. So Joseph's brothers get ready to go down to Egypt, but Jacob says, don't take Benjamin. Benjamin is the youngest. He's the only full-blooded brother of Joseph left. Jacob had married two wives at first, we read a while back, and the only two sons of his favorite wife, Rachel, were Joseph and Benjamin, his two youngest sons. And so he really treasured both of them. And after Joseph's brothers had led Jacob to believe that Joseph was dead, he really, really treasures Benjamin. And so he doesn't want Benjamin to go to Egypt just in case anything bad happens to him. So without Benjamin, the rest of Joseph's brothers end up going to Egypt. And they don't recognize Joseph. They just know that he's in charge. And so when they get there, they bow down to Joseph. If you remember in the last portion, Joseph had a dream that his sheaf of grain would stand up and all of his brother's sheaves of grain would come and bow down before his sheaf. So this is when that dream is coming to fruition. And it says that Joseph saw this and he remembered the dreams which he had about them. So at this point, Joseph, obviously his brothers, last time he had seen them, threw him in a pit and sold him to slavery, never to see him again. So Joseph decides, instead of just coming right out and speaking to his brothers, he disguises himself. He even puts an interpreter between them, so he's speaking Egyptian, so they don't know that he even speaks the language of the Hebrews.
Right.
So he's just pretending to be this whatever Egyptian official.
Yeah, it's been over 20 years since the brothers have seen Joseph. And Joseph was 17 then, so he's in his late 30s, early 40s now. And so now, instead of seeing their brother, what they're seeing is the big head Egyptian guy who has the power to feed them or not. And so their response to him is very submissive, hence the bowing.
Yeah.
But Joseph responds in kind to their perception of him by speaking roughly to them and treating them like strangers.
Yeah, and saying that they're... You've come to spy out the land. You aren't really here for grain. You're spies against Egypt.
So suddenly there's this relationship. Joseph's the one in charge. He's being accusatory and they're being defensive.
Mm. It's like, a complete 180 from the last time they saw him.
Exactly. So Joseph at this point, he chooses to like interrogate them and pressure them into telling him everything about them.
Yeah. It says later, when the brothers were recounting what was happening here, that Joseph questioned them, particularly about them and their relatives, saying, is your father alive? Have you another brother? And so, basically, after all this time, Joseph's, in his gruff Egyptian persona, is ascertaining what's happened to his family in the time that he's been gone, and if everyone's still okay.
Yeah, he knows what the family was. And so he's checking to make sure everything's still the same. He knows what information he's looking for.
Mm.
And so he's able to be very particular. And then they say, yeah, we have one brother. He's the youngest, and he's with our father right now. So Joseph says, I want to see your brother.
If I don't see your brother, then you're definitely spies.
Joseph has the power, since he's in charge of all of Egypt, he can get them to do whatever he wants, basically. Mm. And so he's telling them, you have to bring your brother here.
Mm.
If you don't go get Benjamin from your father and bring him here, I'm going to hold you guys as spies and prisoners, and you're not going to get food. So they don't really have a choice but to do what he says.
Mm.
It says Joseph put them in custody for 3 days. So he's really...
he's leaning into this.
Yeah. And he says, I'll let you guys go home, except one of you. I need to keep one of you as, like, collateral, basically.
Yeah.
So he takes Simeon, and he binds him, and he says, I'm keeping this one. If you want your brother back, you have to go. I'll give you food, because if you are actually what you say and not spies, you do need food. So I'll give you food, and you can go home. But you better come back here with Benjamin, because if you don't, you'll never see Simeon again. And so it's interesting. Joseph has them in this position. They understand that they're in trouble, and that Simeon's going to be a prisoner indefinitely until they can bring Benjamin back. And so they talk among themselves. And Reuben basically says, you know why these bad things are happening to us. It's because of what we did to Joseph. He says, because we sinned against Joseph, there's this reckoning coming for us. And so he's saying the punishment is because of what we did to Joseph. Not realizing that what they did to Joseph is what sent Joseph to Egypt, elevated Joseph to power, and Joseph is putting them in this position right now because of what they did to Joseph.
Yeah.
So Reuben is right. And not only indirectly out of a sense of cosmic justice, but directly, actually. Actions do have consequences that will return upon your own head.
And so the brothers don't realize this, but Joseph has actually been listening in because, like I said earlier, he's been talking through an interpreter this whole time, even though he doesn't really need to. So he was secretly listening in on the brothers, and he now hears that they're remorseful about this. The brothers don't still view what they did as a good thing. They realize it was wrong, and it's that they deserve punishment for it.
Yeah, they're living under the guilt right now.
Yeah. And so he then turns away and weeps. He goes and finds someplace alone away from them. So this deeply moved Joseph. He's had this lingering, do my brothers still hate me, in his heart for 20 years. And now he finally learns they don't hate me. They regret what they did to me.
Yeah, but Joseph continues to keep up the persona.
He gets his act together and he's like, all right, I'm taking Simeon now.
But they had given him the money to buy grain, and he agreed to give them the grain and send them back. But he gave them their money back as well. Secretly. He didn't tell them he was doing it. So now they've got free grain, and he sends them back home. When they saw that the money was in their bags, they freaked out. They said, "What? Why did God do this to us?" So they're basically thinking, when they find out that we still have our money, they're going to think we stole it, and they're going to keep Simeon forever, and we're hopeless. We're lost. So they go to Canaan. They go to their father, Jacob, and they recount everything that's happened. They tell him the ruler of the land wants Benjamin for some reason. So we need to take him back with us. And then they show him the sacks that still have the money in them. And Jacob says, now Simeon's dead. You've as good as killed Simeon. Joseph is dead. And now you want to take Benjamin with you to Egypt. Jacob has totally fallen apart. And so he's saying, don't take Benjamin. I've got to have Benjamin. He's all I have left. Reuben even says, if I don't bring Benjamin back to you, kill my two sons. But we need to take Benjamin with us to Egypt. And Jacob says, no, not an option. Out of the question. You guys are not going back. And so they wait, and they don't go.
And then after an indeterminate amount of time, Jacob says, all right, you need to go back and buy us some food.
Once they had eaten the grain. Yeah. So they're hungry again. They have nothing left again.
And so Judah now speaks up, and he says, the man told us we cannot go back if we don't have Benjamin. But you told us we can't take Benjamin. You have to let us take Benjamin, or we don't get food and we die. And then Judah says, I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. So, like you said in the last portion, Judah's done a lot of bad stuff in his life. But he ends up being remorseful and basically turning around his life, such that at this point, this is the opposite of what we saw him do with Joseph. With Joseph, He was down in the pit, and Judah was the one who led his brothers to sell Joseph into slavery. But now, Judah sees that Benjamin is the most beloved of all the brothers, and instead of being jealous, he puts his own neck out there for Benjamin and says, I will do everything in my power to keep Benjamin safe. Essentially, so help me God.
Yeah, and he's taking the responsibility for if anything happens. He didn't even tell Jacob what happened to Joseph. Mm. He did not take responsibility for that. But now he's taking responsibility for anything that happens to Benjamin, even if it's not his fault. Just if anything happens to Benjamin, he takes the blame.
Yeah.
Israel sees the logic. He sees, if we don't get grain, we're all going to die. So, fine, take Benjamin. But also, we got to deal with that whole, they think we stole the money thing. So he says, take double the money with you so that you can return the money and buy grain. Mm-hmm. And take gifts. Hopefully it's an oversight. And may God have mercy.
Yeah. And the offering of the gift is actually very similar to the first time that Jacob saw Esau after he came back to the land. Jacob had wronged Esau, essentially. And so when he came back, he sent a huge gift ahead of him so that way Esau wouldn't be angry. And so here, Jacob is saying, bring this gift and hopefully, they won't be angry this time.
What I noticed from that was a sort of parallel to the concept of restitution. Mm. Jacob thinks we stole this accidentally, but basically, we need to give it back and then some. Mm. We need to add on top of what we took from them.
That's a later Torah concept where if you steal something, you have to give it back plus, I think it's a tenth.
I think it's plus a fifth.
Plus a fifth. So basically, when you wrong someone, you don't need to just undo what was wrong, but you also need to give extra to make up for the fact that there was wrong done. It's not just we need to put things back to the way they were, because it's not just the way they were if you just restore what was lost. You also did something wrong against that person just by taking what was there. So you have to pay extra to make up for the act itself that you did.
But basically, Jacob wants to make sure he doesn't just return what was taken. He also wants to pacify Joseph by showing how sorry they are. We're not just giving it back to you. We're really trying to make it up to you.
Yeah. It shows their intentions. That their intentions are pure. Their intentions weren't to steal. If they had been wanting to steal, they wouldn't be bringing it back with extra.
Right.
That would be ridiculous.
Of course, Joseph knows that they didn't take it. So. Yeah.
But they don't know that Joseph knows. It doesn't say what Joseph's motives were in putting their money back in their bags. But what it does do is it gives them the opportunity to decide, what are we going to do with this money? Are we going to hold on to it, or are we going to offer it back? So even though it doesn't say why Joseph did this, it ends up serving kind of as a character test to see if they're going to be honest and try to restore what is owed, or if they're still sinful.
But when Joseph sees that they're coming, and he sees that they did bring Benjamin, he tells his servants, get everything ready. I want to have a meal with these guys. When they're summoned to Joseph's house, the brothers are freaked out. They're saying, oh no, why is he summoning us here? It's probably because of the money.
So when Joseph's going to attack us. So when Joseph shows up, they're like, here's the money. We didn't know. Here's the money. Here's a gift. Yeah, and we brought our brother. We brought our brother, just like you said.
And he says, it's okay. Peace. God gave that money to you. Mm. I received your money. So,
so they're like,
son, where'd the money come from? But then he returns Simeon to them. So they're all together. They've made peace.
They bow down to him again. I find that really interesting. Now that Benjamin's with them, all of his brothers are there. And then they bow down to him again. So again, hearkening back to that first dream.
And again, Joseph asks them how they're doing, making sure Jacob's still okay.
Because Jacob's pretty old at this point, and he just wants to make sure he's still alive. But then, Joseph sees Benjamin. When Joseph left, Benjamin was really young. Again, Benjamin is Joseph's only full brother. All of his other brothers are half-brothers. And so when he sees Benjamin, he's like, excuse me a moment, and he leaves, and he starts weeping. I imagine Benjamin's changed a lot since Joseph saw him last, and so this would be a pretty surreal moment for him. So after Joseph kind of like gets over himself, he ends up saying, all right, let's go serve the food. And they serve everybody, and it says that Joseph actually ended up, he was being served separately, but he ended up giving from his own table to the brothers. And he gave 5 times as much to Benjamin as he did to anyone else. So Joseph, even in his hiding his identity, is showing extra favor to Benjamin, his brother, his full brother.
Now that Joseph's had this meal and rejoiced with his brothers, but they still don't know who he is.
Yeah.
He fills their sacks with food. He tells his servants, fill it up with as much as they can carry.
Mm-hmm.
And give them back their money again. But this
with
time...
with a twist.
This time he's adding something else. He's giving them one more difficulty. He takes his silver cup and he says, put it in Benjamin's sack. And we're about to see why. When all the brothers go home with their food the next morning, Joseph then sends men to chase after them. And say, you stole my cup. So whereas last time, they thought that...
they had accidentally stolen when Joseph was like, no, no, no.
I got your money. Yeah. Now, he's hidden something in their sack. They don't know that they've taken anything. Mm. And he's accusing them. So when Joseph accuses them of this, their response is, what are you talking about? There's no way we did that. Remember, like you said before, they brought the money back last time with gifts. And so now they call back to that. They say, look, we brought back your money last time. How could we then now steal from you?
Mm.
There's no way we did this. And just to show how sure we are we didn't do this, if one of us did, whoever did it should die. And we'll all be your servants. It's like they're putting more than their reputation on this.
Yeah, they're
There's
putting
no
their lives
they
on the line. They're like, on our honor, this did not happen.
But Joseph's reply is, none of you is going to die. Just the one who took the sack is going to be my servant, and the rest of you can all go home.
So then they all put down their sacks and start opening them, and they find the cup in Benjamin's sack. And so the brothers all tear their clothes. They're like, oh my God. Goodness, what are we going to do? And Judah basically starts to try to say, take us all as slaves. We can't justify ourselves. God has found out the iniquity of your servants. And so Judah could be referring to basically saying Benjamin did actually steal this, or he could be referring to, again, hearkening back to the last time they got in trouble with Joseph. They were like, this is because of what we did to Joseph. His blood is on our heads. So I do wonder if right here Judah is basically saying, God knows what we did to Joseph, and this is our punishment. But he doesn't want just Benjamin to be there alone. He wants them all to go into slavery together.
But Joseph says, no, all of you are innocent except the one who took the cup. So I'm keeping Benjamin.
Mm.
Now that's a big deal. Because Benjamin is the one that Jacob loved the most. Benjamin is the one that Jacob wasn't willing to let go at first.
And Benjamin is the one that Judah said, I'm giving myself as a surety for him. If anything happens to him, that'll be on me forever.
And now he's becoming a prisoner in the land of Egypt. Interestingly,
the same fate as what happened with Joseph, though Jacob doesn't know that.
So the brothers had previously sold Joseph into servitude in Egypt, and now Joseph is in front of Judah and all his brothers, condemning Benjamin to the same fate.
Mm. So what is Judah going to do? What are the rest of the brothers going to do? We'll see next time. The portion kind of leaves us on a cliffhanger. So we'll have to see what the brothers do next week.
So the major application I would draw out of this portion is be aware of and faithful with God's blessings. Mm. Joseph, when he learned that God was going to give these 7 years of plenty, he took advantage of those blessings. He prepared, he stored what God had given to him. And the reason why was because he knew he would be able to use it. Mm. Through the blessings that God had given him, he was able to feed himself and all the people of Egypt and his family and all the earth.
Right.
We should use the blessings God has given us. We should use them faithfully so that we are serving others through them and serving God through them. We shouldn't squander them for ourselves. We shouldn't just say, hey, God's taking care of me. Cool. And let the blessings go by. Mm. If God is blessing you, see how you can use that to prepare for the future and to help others.
That wraps up the portion of Miketz. Next week, we'll be looking at the portion Vayigash, so be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new episodes. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.